This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 52. Coming up on today's show, the Stone Verdict. All that and more on the way on Still Standing.
No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Thanks a lot for tuning in to Still Standing. This is Michael Caputo, of course. I'm sure some of you are tuning in to hear my reaction to the verdict in the federal criminal trial of Roger Stone. My last week's podcast was about my impressions of the trial. I've attended all the trial. I missed one day. In fact, after I got off the recording of my podcast last week, I headed out to the Buffalo airport to catch a flight to Washington. That was Monday night, arriving in time to go to the Stone trial on Tuesday. And, of course, it's Buffalo. I got snowed in. I wasn't able to go until late the next day because I probably could have gone really early if I didn't have children. But, of course, my school-age children were out of school due to the big snowstorm here in Buffalo. That did not relieve my wife of her duties for the day. She had to leave. I stayed home with the children and then caught a flight out that evening, the same flight the night before that had been canceled, to be in Washington late on Tuesday night, able to go to the trial on Wednesday. And I did. I was there in time for, you know, the final arguments, the closing arguments of the defense and the prosecution. I was shocked to find out that the defense had not laid out more witnesses or any witnesses. They simply played Roger's testimony to the House Intelligence Committee as their only presentation. Frankly, that really shocked me, considering the people they could have put on the stand to impugn the integrity of Randy Credico, including some evidence that showed that he, in fact, thought he had been pulling one over on Roger Stone. I think the defense, Roger Stone's defense, I'm not an attorney. I can't tell you if it was bad or it was good, but I mean, honestly, when the verdict comes back, you've lost on all counts, and the verdict comes back in what seems to be very short time. Roger Stone's defense failed him. Maybe there wasn't a defense. But we know one thing, the defense team he chose did not provide a defense. And therefore, whether they were right or wrong, good or bad, the results came back in the worst possible scenario. Guilty on all counts, and the jury came back in fairly short time, which puts an exclamation point punctuation at the end of the guilty verdict. It was a terrible day. It was awful. You know, I didn't intend to do anything to disrupt things. I had been going every day. I made some, you know, I thought good relationships with the federal marshals in the room, those at the front door and in the hallways of the Prettyman courthouse. Very good guys, all of them. They all seemed to be like retired cops or something. Not federal marshals carrying a weapon and the guys you'd see in other capacities. I think this is a second tier, the guys inside the building, making sure the building's secure. Maybe they're private contractors wearing the name of the Federal Marshal Service. I don't know, but they were good guys, all of them, or the ones I met anyway. When I heard the closing arguments of the prosecution, it was very clear to me that Roger was in trouble. I was hoping that the defense would come back with something solid and sound and something that we could hang on to, but they didn't. I don't really want to sum up their arguments too much because I think I probably wouldn't do it justice. There's probably more complexity to it than what I saw, but what I had a problem with was they said, Roger lied, so what? There had been no crime committed, you know, nothing that he was hiding criminal. But that didn't excuse Roger's lying in the first place. left him open to perjury, you know, lying before Congress. And I didn't think that they knocked out the witness tampering. That's a very serious charge. It seems to be the most serious of all these charges. If they had punched out the witness tampering charge, maybe Roger stood a pretty good chance at an appeal. Maybe to be left out of jail on appeal. But the witness tampering charge stood. When I knew, and everybody around Roger knows, that Randy Credico and he had had a colorful exchange, language exchange, you know, threats and the dozens and insults for 15, 16 years, 17 years that they had been friends. If you opened up my emails now and saw the emails I've gotten from Roger Stone in the last 30 years, I probably got an email saying prepare to die a dozen times every time Roger was pissed or pretending to be angry. His statement, prepare to die, was his exaggerated way of letting you know that you pissed him off, or teasing, making you feel like you pissed him off. It was a recurring comment from him. None of us ever felt like we were going to die. I don't believe that Credico gave the impression to the jury that he was preparing to die. But I'll tell you, the defense didn't make that case. Roger had said that he was going to take away Credico's dog, and he had said that before. He didn't think that Credico fed the dog and took care of the dog, even though Credico clearly, you know, was attached to the dog. Roger, for many months, had been giving Credico crap for having a dog for his stress. It was all crap. Roger felt that the dog was not being well cared for. I'll take that dog away, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's what he said. Credico made it very clear to the jury that he didn't feel the least bit threatened by Roger taking his dog or hurting his dog. He said that Roger loves all dogs, and he clearly loves my dog too. So Roger failed to intimidate Randy Credico, failed to threaten his dog. And Randy also said that, there were 1,000 inputs that made him want to declare that he was going to take the Fifth Amendment. Not just Roger Stone. Still, they got him for witness tampering, and that is a killer. That is a hurtful charge. I know that Roger was not intending to tamper with Randy Credico, but that is how it's going down. Because of the politicized nature of these charges, my friend Roger Stone he's facing a life, a death sentence in prison at 67, going to jail for what could be 20, 50 years, whatever. He's a, obviously, it's a death sentence. And for what I consider to be nothing, the most frustrating thing about this, beyond the fact that you don't stand a chance as a Republican, especially a conservative, and certainly not a colorful conservative like Roger Stone, does not stand a chance with an Obama judge and a Washington, D.C. jury. Not at all. I can guarantee you not one of the people in the jury was a Republican. I know that of all the jury pool, the 100-plus people that they brought in, not one of them was a veteran. This was a crew of very reliably liberal Clinton Obama voters who were going to sit in judgment on their peer, Roger Stone, nowhere near their peer. It was always going to end this way. Always. Always. So when it went down, when we were called in for the verdict on Friday, I knew it was bad because the jury really didn't get started to deliberating until something like 1:30 on Thursday, and by 5 o'clock they were dismissed for the day, and then we all came back at 9 or so. They were back in at 9:30, something like that, and I believe it was, she's not even yet 11, I guess, when they said they were ready to give a verdict. We all knew it was bad. I saw Nydia, Roger's wife, outside the courtroom, and I hugged her. I can talk to her. I can talk to his family. I can't talk to him. I think you probably know Roger has, under court order, been disallowed. He'd been told he cannot speak to me, contact me, make a hand gesture, anything. I haven't spoken to Roger since late January. Not once, never, not an email, not a text. And this is after 30 years of pretty regular contact, sometimes multiple times a day. And then suddenly your friend is dead, right? Your friend is gone. Suddenly your friend really is in big trouble and you can't even speak to him. Can't advise him. Can't tell him that it's, you know, life is worth living, even with this death sentence on your head. So even after the verdict came in, the verdict was coming in, I was still not allowed to talk to Roger. You know, around the courthouse, that meant turning my back on him every time he walked by. I was told that if I was making eye contact with Roger at any point, that both of us would be put in jail. So I had to avoid it. In fact, most people don't know this, but on the first day of the trial, the prosecution complained about me because they didn't want me there, but the judge, I guess, figured that I couldn't be kept away as long as I stayed away from Roger. And that meant, you know, ducking into the bathroom when he's coming down the hall, you know, going to the other side of the cafeteria when he walks by, turning my back on him to make sure there's no accusation of eye contact, God forbid, right? 2 weeks of that. Yeah, it was good to see him, though. I hadn't seen him since January. We usually spent a lot of time together. We spent holidays together. I think Easters were a habit of ours. Roger would make his sauce, his Sunday sauce for Easter. Delicious. So when they called us in for the verdict, I knew it was bad. It was too early on Friday. Everybody knew it was bad. The courtroom was packed with federal marshals, those in uniform and not. Most of them I had seen before. Most of them we had, you know, had treated me with respect, and I certainly had treated them with respect. Oh, yeah, turn off your cell phone on the way in. They check it. Turn off your computer on the way in. They check it. You know, they tell you to keep quiet. You stay quiet. I stayed quiet the whole time. I never once spoke out of turn. I never had to be warned. Stand up, sit down. You know, it was like mass. We did everything with genuflect this jury of your peers. So when the jury was called in and the foreman introduced herself, she was someone who had served, I had watched her being interviewed by the defense and the prosecution. And she introduced herself as someone who had run for Congress as a Democrat once before. Once a Democrat candidate for United States Congress, and also had been on a jury before and had served as foreman. I thought, well, that one, no, they'll narrow this group of 100 down to 36 and she'll be gone. When the jury filed in, there she was. I thought, oh no, the pickings must have been slim if the former Democrat candidate for United States Congress was in the jury. Not just in the pool and punched out, but in the jury. I thought, this is not good. And then, as it turns out, when the judge said, the foreman of the jury, please rise. The foreman stood, and it was a former Democrat candidate for the United States House of Representatives. Where this alleged crime, where these crimes were alleged, at the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. This woman ran for that body, failed, and aspired to be in that body. I was just like, that was another sign. The coup's foreman, the Democrat candidate. She stood and basically read out guilty as charged, unanimous, in all of the 7 charges. All of them. When it came to the last one, the witness tampering, when they said unanimous guilty verdict, it blew me away. It absolutely blew me away. I was bowled over completely. I had never been through a criminal trial before, not my own, not anybody else's. You know, I do litigation communications. Our PR firm does that. We're allied with several different law firms, but rarely do we work on criminal trials. And frankly, I've never attended one. So this, it was a punch in the gut when they said guilty on all counts. in such record time, such a massive failure of Rodgers' defense, a punch in my gut. I was numb. And the judge thanked the jury for their service and dismissed them. And as they left the room, the clerk, said, "All rise," and everybody rose, and my legs wouldn't work. I mean that to tell you that I didn't plan on not standing up when the jury left the room. I didn't plan it. It happened. Literally, my legs would not work. But that's not because I had a physical ailment. It's just that I was totally shocked. And standing wasn't something that, even though I was being barked at by the federal marshal, it hadn't happened. I didn't do it. So when they said, "Rise, sir," I stood up. But I realized that for that moment I was seated, that I had made a statement as small as whatever, even as minuscule, even ant-like. I had made a statement that I didn't agree with these proceedings. The Obama judge and the Washington jury, I didn't think had delivered justice, especially in the witness tampering charge. So I stood up and I turned my back on them. It just happened. I didn't plan it. I just did it. Now, as I look back on it, I remember now, I was really in a fog. I remember being kind of out of it for the moment. A friend of mine who saw my face said it looked vacant. Like, I couldn't believe what had just happened and I wasn't there, right? When I stood up, though, I saw Roger's face. He was right there within yards of me, and I realized that I cannot look at Roger Stone. If I look at Roger Stone, I'm going to be thrown in jail, both of us. I turned around automatically after doing this for 2 weeks, after doing this for 10 months, turning my back on Roger Stone. In doing so, I turned my back on the proceedings that railroaded him. So yeah, I turned my back. Yeah, it was a little bit involuntary, but I'm not going to make an excuse for my activity. My body did what my mind and my heart wanted it to do. I turned my back on the proceedings. I was asked to leave. I left immediately, and they assigned one of the federal marshals to walk me out. As I'm walking out, he's an older guy, looked like a retired cop probably, African-American guy, some glasses perched on his nose, about my height, a little bit soft in the belly like me, probably a little older than me, didn't look like a bad guy. None of those guys did, And we're standing outside the elevator down the hall from the courtroom, which I had just been thrown out of. And I said, "Wow, man, I don't know how you do this every day." And he said, "It's a job, sir." And without any animosity, I just said, "Man, I'd rather die." In response, the federal marshal said, "That can be arranged." At first, I was shocked that he said that. "That can be arranged. I'd rather die. That can be arranged." And when I said I'd rather die, it wasn't like, "Hey, old man, you got a shitty job." That's not what I meant. What I meant was, "Wow, this is a lot. How do you do it? I couldn't do it. I'd rather die. I couldn't do this." Pulling people out of courtrooms with emotional reactions to the death sentence of their friend, had to be a difficult thing to do. It sounded disrespectful, I think, to him. And he said, "That can be arranged." Now, at first I was very upset by this. He and I exchanged a lot of words on the way out. He immediately lied to me and said, no, you said that." Well, he understood at that moment that he had screwed up. At the least, his comment that my death could be arranged was inappropriate. If it was meant to be humor, it could have been. It was inappropriate humor. At worst, it was a threat. Something to be very concerned about. Probably lies in between them. And, people said, "Well, you need to lodge a complaint, Michael. This is completely uncool. It was really, inappropriate all the way. Complaints remained arranged all the way to, he threatened you." But I didn't have it all together. My head was up my ass. I had just heard the death sentence of my friend. Couldn't even speak to him about it. Couldn't shake his hand or give him a hug. Nothing. I was absolutely it was an out-of-body experience. And if I had complained against this guy, who's probably a retired cop, you know, he'd go through all kinds of crap for something I frankly couldn't even characterize properly because I just wasn't there. I was absent. You know, I was reacting viscerally, physically, emotionally. And here I'm, what I'm going to do, complain against this guy. I didn't feel threatened when he said it. I felt defeated. Filing a complaint against the guy who threatens you when you feel defeated, maybe. Filing a complaint against the guy who's just saying the wrong thing at the wrong time when you feel defeated, why drag him through it? I didn't do it. I walked out. That's 3 days ago, right about now. 3 days ago, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I'm still numb. I got on a plane. I came home. My plane, of course, was delayed 4.5 hours. Thank you, United Airlines. But I made it home Friday night, and Saturday morning when I woke up, my 5-year-old, my 7-year-old girls came to my bedroom and climbed into bed with my wife and I. And I held them close, knowing that there, but for the grace of God, go I, or any other political consultant who does this for a living, who walks too close to the edge like Roger Stone, who all his life had walked that tightrope of spin and then fell. 3 days, I'm finally waking up from it. I have more to say. Please stand by for these messages. This is Michael Caputo for Still Standing. Remember, stillstandingpodcast.com. I'm going to be back real quickly after these messages. Still standing.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Still Standing. This is Michael Caputo. Thanks a lot for sticking around. If you like this and want to hear more of my insights as we go forward, I'm not always talking about myself, but I do try to talk about things that I know about. I do know about this, the death sentence for my friend Roger. But people support this broadcast on Patreon, this recording on patreon.com, Still Standing with Michael Caputo on patreon.com. And we call folks who contribute our executive producers. It's so helpful to us. Pays for some of these expenses. It's quite expensive to do. My producer, Sean Dwyer, has been with me for some time. He works with me on other public relations issues for my clients, but he produces this. I really appreciate him. And all of our executive producers, Henry Wotazek, John Seifert, Susan Havey, Sonia Carlin, my executive producer, Thomas Fulton, Darcy Swenson, Daniel Markey, Stephen Flaminio, Samantha Lynn. Thank you, Samantha. I see you on Twitter and Facebook. Rachel, Brian Pizdursky, Susan Stevens, Jack Bromwich, Jordan Gostomsky, Julie, Patty Freeling, Bill Grant, Greg Mumbach, Mark Berry, my old pal Mark, Gary Stokes, all executive producers. Thank you. Thank you so much for your support at patreon.com. Yeah, Roger Stone's trial and verdict really blew me away. I've kind of stayed out of television since then. I didn't want to react. I'm being asked to go on some of the CNN and Fox shows to talk about it, and maybe I should. I don't see anybody out there swinging for it for Roger, because I don't believe Roger truly committed a crime. I mean, did he lie to Congress? I guess the jury has found him to have lied. I think it's dubious, since we know so many people have lied to Congress in the last couple of years, including Congress lying to us, and only Roger gets prosecuted for it. But again, remember, this House of Representatives Committee, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, is leading the way on the president's bogus impeachment investigation, and they were way out in front on the bogus Russia investigation. They will do anything to stop President Trump. In doing so, they seem to have killed Roger Stone. Roger Stone has made a living out of the kind of blustery, often exaggerated rhetoric that we all hear from him and others in politics. Sometimes he does it for himself, and other times for his clients, always for his clients, whether they're companies or candidates. That practice of spinning, right? Spinning, we call it in politics. That now appears to mean that he'll be incarcerated for the remainder of his natural life. At 67, how long will that be when he's in prison? WikiLeaks, if you remember in 2016, was a matter of constant discussion and speculation, not only by the media, but by political consultants and pundits everywhere on both sides of the aisle. Roger Stone was just one of the people. Reporters who now wring their hands over Roger Stone spending so much time looking for contacts with WikiLeaks, you know, tend to forget two things. Number one, Roger Stone worked for InfoWars. That was his primary income during the 2016 election, since he was removed from the Trump campaign. InfoWars paid him a great deal of money. And if you know anything about InfoWars, it is blustery, exaggerated rhetoric. You know, it's spin. And yet still, it's where people go, some people go to get their information, their news. And Roger, like these reporters who now wring their hands, Stone was trying to find the emails, just like they were. And of course, who else was really interested in those emails? The Justice Department. They became extremely interested, and especially in finding out whether there were any links between the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks itself. Especially its founder, Julian Assange, who was at the time, through this whole thing, in exile at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Were there any connections between the Trump campaign, WikiLeaks, Julian Assange? We know that the special counsel, the Mueller investigation, proved there were not any. They found none. Nowhere. Roger was bragging like he had them, and then quickly changed his tune and said he had a go-between, which he did. But when they found out that the campaign didn't have any, it proved that there weren't any contacts at all with WikiLeaks in the campaign, I think they got pissed off. Stone, you know, as you remember from 2016, he never tried to hide his interest in WikiLeaks, and even at times bragged about more of a connection to them than he had. Anybody who knows Roger Stone, the idea that he would exaggerate his level of connection with a candidate or an issue or a problem would find the fact that he exaggerated not the least bit surprising. The government, however, at first believed his spin, that he was really connected. They targeted Jerome Corsi, who had given Roger information about WikiLeaks. Of course, the information he gave was information he guessed at. He didn't have any connection to WikiLeaks, but he pretended he did. The government was targeting Randy Credico, who also claimed to have connection to WikiLeaks that he didn't. He actually did speak to Julian Assange, but only on the air, after the campaign had lunch with him later on. But he told Roger a level of information that he insinuated came from WikiLeaks. They targeted Corsi and Credico, and then eventually Roger Stone himself, to prove that there was some kind of connection to WikiLeaks. When they found out it was all just spin, they were frustrated. Credico, if you remember the Washington Post story where they quoted his attorney saying that they just found Credico to be completely not credible and dropped their investigation to him entirely. Now, for some reason, this incredible person, his emails ended up on trial. Randy Credico, that was Jerry Corsi. Randy Credico, they brought him actually to witness. But when they found it was all spin, they were frustrated. And they decided to find a way to put Roger Stone in jail anyway. Roger, being the oldest friend around the president, the one who first talked him into running for president. That's close to the president, right? Let's put him in jail. Spin, you know what that is. Getting your side out in politics. Spinning the truth. insinuates that some of it is false. That's true. Spin, it's a part of politics. I do it for a living. Spin is often untrue, especially in, you know, campaigns. Some people on both sides, Democrat and Republican, are pretty good at spin. Some don't have the stomach for it. Roger was the best at it, had an iron stomach, for what it's worth. That was his reputation, spin. I remember Roger stepping out into the hallway to talk to reporters, and he said, okay, who needs to be spun? He embraced it. Even though it was often considered untrue, spin was Roger's stock and trade. Reporters who worked with Roger Stone, and all the best reporters worked with Roger Stone, they all tell you that after talking with Stone, they had to figure out what was truth and what was just spin. The smart reporters, they learned to separate the spin from the truth and disregard the spin and print what they thought was actually true. This was standard, not just for Roger, but for many political operatives on both sides. There are Democrats who tell you they love to spin. There are Republicans that will tell you that they love to spin. Roger was very good at it. I'm not a lawyer, but I am convinced that there's room for appeal here. I could be wrong, but we all know soon. I'll concede that one cannot safely spin a congressional committee under oath. Clearly, Roger's conviction on all counts attests to the seriousness of this matter. But, still, since Roger's not the only one lying to Congress, just the only one being jailed for it, I'm sure you can sense my cynicism here. Certainly, his selective prosecution is grounds enough for a pardon, but it's not enough. I don't know what a pardon means. I mean, the president is pardoning military criminals and crackheads and rapists, I guess. I don't know. He's doing some broad releasing people from prison because through criminal justice reform, some of them are undoubtedly going back real criminals. Roger's selective prosecution is grounds enough for a pardon. Our two-tier justice system fails us every single day now, it seems. A president can't possibly pardon all those unfairly incarcerated, but he's trying with this justice reform, criminal justice reform initiative. But Roger stands apart for another reason, not just selective prosecution. Another reason. And I'm going to get a quick drink here on Still Standing. This is a little bit difficult for me. I'm going to get a quick drink, come back, hang around for a break here. Michael Caputo, stillstandingpodcast.com. I've got some more for you. I promise you. I'll be right back. Still standing. Hi, it's Michael Caputo again for Still Standing. Thanks a lot for sticking around. I'm sorry about that. I need to get a drink of water. This is really hard for me to get out. It's especially hard for me because I'm not able to speak to Roger. It's hard for me to speak to his family and attorneys, too, because God knows what's going to cause them to throw Roger in jail. And if Roger wants to get the court order dropped, he can get it dropped, and I'm standing by for that. But it's difficult for me to tell you what is on my mind when I don't know what's on his mind, but I can tell you again that I'll concede one cannot safely spin a congressional committee under oath. It's Rogers convicted on all counts, and that shows you all you need to know. It's selective prosecution, though. It's unquestionable that Roger has known the president for 30 years, and that makes this different. I know the left folks who listen to my podcast are saying, he broke the law, he goes to jail. Yes, 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 I get that. But the pardon is not for the innocent alone. It's also for the guilty. After 30 years of working together, all those years Roger spent advising the president as he prepared for his ultimate run for public office. And they grew to be really close friends. I can tell you, I witnessed their friendship many times across those years. I first met President Trump. Donald Trump introduced him to me at the New Orleans Convention in 1988. This guy's going to run for president someday. He's going to win, he said. 1988. I laughed, but it was really nice to meet him. He was already famous then, President Trump. Already famous. I really enjoyed his company. So their friendship is beyond question. 30 years. Sometimes on, sometimes off. But something else is unquestionable. Roger Stone has been 100% loyal to the President of the United States. In their opening and closing statements, the prosecution got just one thing right. One thing. They said Roger Stone lied because what he did looked bad for the president. Even though Roger Stone had done nothing illegal to lie about. Of course, I added that last bit. Prosecutors said Roger Stone lied because he did what he did looked bad for the president. Adding to that, whatever he did, Roger Stone did nothing illegal to even lie about. Ultimately, Roger failed with his go-betweens to establish a contact with Julian Assange. Never made that contact, never broke a law. But he decided that his attempts to make contact would reflect badly on the president as this bogus Russia investigation took off. Thinking that the Russia investigation was crap, Roger thought it was best for him to stand strong for the president. So he spun the truth like he had all of his professional life, and eventually he made the mistake of doing that under oath. You can't do that. Russia-Trump collusion turned out to be a hoax, of course, and it turned out that WikiLeaks had no connection to the Trump campaign at all. No Trump associate was ever prosecuted for collusion-related crimes. No Trump guy was prosecuted for Russia stuff. In fact, one thing is clear, nobody stands accused of any crimes which they committed to protect the President of the United States. Financial crimes for Paul Manafort, lying to the FBI about when he had a meeting, Paul, you know, Papadopoulos, you know, stealing over $1 million from someone and hiding it in tax havens, secret bank accounts, Rick Gates. And so on, you know. No one stands accused of any crimes that they committed to protect the President of the United States. No one is in jail for protecting the President of the United States, except Roger Stone. After 3 decades of friendship and a really rough presidential campaign, especially hard on Roger, after bringing the president to the dance, he was thrown out before the music even started. Roger Stone lied because what he did would look bad for the president. Not that what he did would kill the presidency or even wound the president, really. He tried to talk to WikiLeaks and never managed to do it, never shared the information with the president. Wasn't going to hurt the president, but he thought it would. It would just look bad. Of course it would look bad. The president maybe would have a bad week. And that part of the story would look bad for some months. If it weren't for Roger Stone's devotion to the president, he would not be headed for prison today. Let me repeat that. If it weren't for Roger Stone's devotion to the president of the United States, he would not be headed for prison today. There was no Russian conspiracy. Nobody contacted Julian Assange at all. There was no crime, and yet Roger Stone did all this. Lied to Congress, and he's going to go to jail for it. Spin is now a crime, and politics is a crime scene. Make no mistake. This will hurt many of all political stripes, both political parties, Democrat, Republican, right now. It's destroyed the life and the family of the president's longest-serving and most loyal soldier. I implore the President of the United States to pardon Roger Stone. It's the right thing to do. As for me, my cynicism has grown into hate, really. Real hatred. It's eating me up, you know. The Mueller team really believed their Russia hoax. It was commissioned by the Clinton campaign, curated by the intelligence community, implemented by the Department of Justice, and the Mueller team really believed it. I saw it in their eyes, in the eyes of Aaron Zelinsky, the prosecutor in the courtroom with Roger, also interrogated me. I saw it in Zelinsky's eyes that he really believed it. He was certain of Russian collusion, convinced, a true believer in a hoax. In the end, all those people lined up to subvert this presidency with a bogus Russia conspiracy. In the end, they failed completely to entrap the president. That's why they're now focused on a Ukrainian trap to try to get the president. So now that they're off that topic, the collateral damage of the Russia hoax is going to have to do. That's Roger Stone. Now they're saying that Roger Stone, who said under oath that he never spoke to the president about this, and nobody was party to a telephone conversation where they said he spoke to the president. Some people say they overheard the president on a telephone call with Roger Stone. I can tell you that's dubious, because when Roger Stone speaks on the telephone, it's not as loud as the president speaking into your ear. When Roger Stone speaks, it's measured, it's quiet. It's not Donald Trump loud in a cell phone in a Ukrainian restaurant talking to Ambassador Sondland. This is Roger Stone somehow being heard by Rick Gates, who we know is a liar. We just don't know when he's lying. Heard by Rick Gates in a loud SUV as they're busting their way all the way to the airport. It's brought into evidence. Yes, I overheard it. I overheard Roger. Bull. In fact, what was actually going on in those telephone conversations, they do not know. Nobody knows. In fact, the judge in this Stone trial instructed the jury to understand that they don't know what's in these telephone calls. You just know that they happened. Doesn't mean you can't speculate what might have been in there, but you're going to have to find some evidence, not circumstantial evidence, in order to convict somebody of lying about what happened in that telephone conversation. Roger Stone stands tall, does not concede that he spoke to the president about WikiLeaks. Yet they're going to try and impeach the president on this tidbit from the Stone trial. The crimes Roger Stone's been found guilty of, really, they stem from nothing more than, at worst, bragging and exaggerating his abilities to influence political events during a campaign in the political arena, trying to be relevant at a time when anyone around the president was gaining relevancy, around the presidential candidate who was winning, looked like he was going to win, maybe by a hair, but he might win. Roger Stone brought him to the dance, and then he danced off with everyone else. He's bragging and exaggerating in the political arena. Bragging and exaggerating in the political arena. Many, 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 many other political consultants and campaign vendors and candidates are going to have to change their ways, because spin is now a crime. For sure, don't do it in front of a congressional committee. Roger Stone made that mistake. But was standing up for the president, trying to make sure he didn't look bad, even though there was no crime, is that a reason for Roger Stone to go to jail? The president needs to look at this and understand that Roger Stone would not be in this pickle if it weren't for the presidency of Donald J. Trump. Pardon him, Mr. President. Pardon Roger Stone. Your base is counting on it. Thank you for listening to Still Staying with Michael Caputo. Thanks for sticking around for the whole thing. I'll change topics hopefully next week. Maybe not. I have to decide whether I'm going to go on television or not. Every time I go on TV, especially on CNN, I get death threats. And I'm not going to go on there and say Roger's innocent. That's not the proper discussion at this point. A jury, not of his peers, but a jury, as messed up as it was, found him guilty. And an appeal, as you probably know, doesn't normally work out. Most appeals fail. Roger unanimously, every single charge, guilty in record time. The chances of an appeal. I don't know. I'm not an attorney. I don't know. But what are the chances of a pardon of the president's oldest friend who was loyal to the end? What are the chances of a presidential pardon?